with various violations against the state. Now, if I may do a quick recap, 35 people were questioned by police over the Black Flag convoy. Code Blue's editor-in-chief was summoned over an article on PPVs. Activist Heidi Kwa charged for a Facebook post on immigration detention. Doctors, nurses and medical staff at MIAPS were questioned by police. Fahmy Reza investigated for the seventh time. And a 20-year-old co-founder of Misi Solidarity had her home raided and she was detained overnight. Now, that's 39 people just this week. Tharma Pillay is the co-founder of Undi 18 and he joins us now. Tharma, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, police, I believe, if I, correct me if I'm mistaken, but police have called you in for questioning three times now, I think, over the Black Flag convoy. I'm just wondering, Tharma, what do you think the police believed you did wrong?
Firstly, thank you very much for having me. It's certainly been a while, always a pleasure. I think, in fact, in the past 1 week alone, I've been called for questioning twice already. For me, I think the police seem to think that having the expression or organizing a protest or expressing our displeasure against the government and the administration seems to be wrong. Hence, they are investigating not only myself, and as you rightly mentioned, over 30 individuals, and Sarah was held in prison last night over her criticism over the government. So I think it's clear that the police is not tolerating dissent, is not tolerating our expression and our opinion about the government.
Tharma, as I understand it, dissent in itself is not illegal in this country, at least not yet. So what exactly do they charge you with, if they do charge you? How are they framing this so that it becomes a criminal matter and not just a political one?
All right. So I've been questioned over a number of acts at the moment under 233, which is the Communications Multimedia Act. Act 505B, and also the Diseases Act, and also Sarah was charged under investigated under the Sedition Act. So as you can see, they're using a myriad of methods and different laws to try to pin this on us and try to put the blame on us and try to essentially intimidate, harass, and stop people from expressing our opinions, going to the streets, or even from organizing protests as a whole. For example, we organized a protest last week where we were just sitting in cars and driving around. But as you can see, even that, we got called up for questioning. And for me, I don't really think driving around in cars is an SOP breach. So it's a bit odd that we were called up for questioning.
You know, there are many that were questioned by police, are very young, probably their very first time having any kind of encounter with investigators. Take Sarah for an example, 20 years old and detained overnight. Can I ask you whether you believe these police investigations might have a chilling effect on young dissenting voices?
I think certainly they are trying to. They're trying to make us afraid. They're trying to push us down and they're trying to make us to stop criticizing, stop speaking up and stop challenging the norms. But the fundamental reality is this. We're doing this not because we want to, not because it is cool, not because it is fun, but because it's necessary. People are dying. People are getting sick. People are losing their lives. People are committing suicide and people are facing mental health and issues and depression, right? This is a necessary protest and we are fighting not only for ourselves, but also for the lives and the dignity of millions of Malaysians. So I think for us, they can try, but I don't think they're going to be very successful.
Tharma, the whole question of the public health crisis, and I know you just said that this is one of the primary reasons that you are protesting, but do you think that, especially when we think about tomorrow's protest, that you might not have the public on your side? They might think that what you're doing, at least in gathering in large numbers, might in fact endanger the public. And I'm sure there will be, a host of commentators and mainstream media that might frame it that way. How do you respond to the charge that you're being irresponsible?
Honestly, we've been getting this question a lot. And the easiest way to think about it is, let's flip the question around, right? We've been in lockdown for 2 months And has you staying home sort of caused the case numbers to go down, right? Is it, what, 1,000 cases? 2,000 cases? Oh, no, it's 17,000 cases that we're at the moment. So to say that being locked down, being staying at home, being docile has been the secret and the recipe to solving this crisis clearly is wrong. Because do you know why? Because the real issue is government failure. And no amount of personal discipline will be able to overcome the government failure, because you look at issues such as procurement of not only vaccines, but also ambulances, issues of how do we track COVID patients? How do we manage them? Are we funding doctors enough? These are all issues that need to be discussed, need to be brought forward. And just staying home and trying to pretend that it's not government failure really is not changing the situation. So what we are saying is that, yes, let's try certain protest methods. So, for example, before this, we did the drive-around protest, very SOP safe, very clean. Right, we did many online protests, and we did it very successfully, by the way. We received hundreds of thousands of submissions and supports when we asked people to put up their black flags on social media and put it up on their homes, drive around the black flags in their cars. So I think we've done the social media route, we've done the online protest route, and I don't mean to boast here, we were really successful. But when you have a government that is determined not to listen to you, right, and determined not to pay attention, and in fact, they're even trying to shut down Parliament, I think that this calls for an escalation. So we're not doing this because we haven't tried online protests, but because we've tried it, we were really good at it, yet it didn't really work. And that's why we really need to take the next step, up the pressure, and make sure that this government really listens to what Rakyat wants.
Dharmat, talking about government listening, if I understand correctly, there are three demands that are being requested. I'm just wondering what these demands would solve. Who are you trying to persuade with these demands?
I think the clearest people that we want to reach out to and speak to is the Rakyat as a whole, for us to realize and recognize that the power is in our hands. But most importantly, we are asking that the Prime Minister take responsibility for his failures in managing the pandemic, because it's quite clear cut. We've had 1.5 years of his leadership, and things have not gotten better. In fact, they've gotten far worse. So our opinion is this. If the Prime Minister is shown conclusively that he's not able to manage the pandemic and also protect the economic prosperity and also the livelihoods of the average citizen, then please make way for someone else. And it's very clear that the anger is not just from the average citizen, it's also from the royalty. I think we've seen a number of strongly written open statements decrying and sort of saying that there is disappointment from the Yang di-Pertuan Agong towards this government. So if the Yang di-Pertuan Agong is expressing his discontent, I think the Rakyat can also express our discontent to the government in our own way.
Very quickly, tomorrow you have a protest. What's going to be your measure of success for tomorrow's event?
For us, the measure of success is one, getting as many people down there as possible. But of course, we recognize there's a pandemic situation, so we may not be expecting too many. But the most important is that, can we show that protests are possible in a pandemic, number one? Number two is that we'll be buying and having as much PPE, face shields, face masks, hand sanitizers as possible. So we want to show that doing a protest is possible. Let's do it in a safe manner, and let's show that the Rakyat is angry. And I think that's the message I want to show, not only to national media, but also to international media.
All right, Dharmat, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. That was Dharmat Pillay, co-founder of Undi 18. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this, but we will be back with more, so stay tuned.
Dipercayai meloloskan diri dengan melompat pagar yang dikenakan perintah kawalan pergerakan diperketatkan.
Saya.
Amanah di tangan kita.
adat, budaya dan semangat menjadi kesinambungan perpaduan tanah air yang tercinta. Berteraskan adab yang terpahat di jiwa dan raga. Marilah bersama kita membina negara Malaysia.
Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. Youth activist Nurul Rifaiyah Mohamed Iqbal, who recently graduated from secondary school, claimed that she was denied an opportunity for entry into a public university because of her political activism. Rifaiyah joins us now. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Rifaiyah. Good evening. You claim that there's been government retaliation to your political activism. And I'm wondering, Rifaiyah, you know, while you may not intend it to be, but do you think that your story might in some way, perhaps even inadvertently, deter other young people from being involved in activism?
All right. First of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. It played a huge role and played a huge part of it. What happened today will define our future leaders. What happened today will define our youth future, and upcoming generations are watching us. So I will say that what happened today at me is going to, I will say, an eye exposure. I mean, especially those that have power to change this. And I will not let this happen for the upcoming generation. And obviously, I'm not going to be the last person. There's going to be another person that's going through the same thing. But we'll try our best to, you know, speak up. And I have a right to speak up as well. We are living in a democratic country, and also we're living under federal constitution. Yeah.
Yeah, Rifaiyah, yes, we all wish that we were living in a more democratic country. I want to ask you, though, are you getting support and from your family? And is family support very important for activists to do their work?
Definitely. My father, I mean, like, all of my family, like, really support me. Not just my family. I have, like, a really strong circle surrounding me, including, you know, been dealing with so many NGOs. There's a lot of people that support me and really, you know, lend hand for me if anything, if I need anything. And I think it's a good thing for me. And I would say that in this current situation, everyone go through so many things, you know, we don't know what shoes that they are going through right now. So I think I'm very grateful because I have like wonderful friends and families that support me all the way till now. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I'm just wondering, you know, maybe some other young people might not have the same type of support, who might be intimidated by the thought of having, you know, retaliation by authorities over things that they comment on online, things that they speak up about. What are the conversations being had by young people, your peers, Rifaiyah, about, for instance, the state, the recent spate of investigations, you know, by authorities? Is there a chilling effect on them and what they feel they're able to talk about or speak up about? Or has it had the opposite effect? Has it, in fact, deepened the grievances felt by young people?
Well, I think at first, of course, most of my peers, most of my friends are really scared to, you know, Kuala and Turun tomorrow for the protest. Because, like, you know, what going on right now when Tarma, Sarah and the rest of the team got called by the police. Obviously, most of my friends are scared. But I think this is where a moment where we have to, we have to go to protest, because at this point, you know, we don't want these things happen in, you know, or I would say like to our upcoming generation, to my kids, you know, I would say that because this is very important. And also, like, my friends realized that, you know, Turun protest tomorrow for the hashtag Lawan tomorrow doesn't mean that it is not important. It's play a huge part and it's play a huge role to our countries and to our future. And definitely, we will Lawan till we'll get our demands, the three demands. Yeah.
Rifaya, why are you angry? And who are you angry with?
Obviously, I'm angry about what's going on right now. We have, like, so many things happen in our country. The cases increases, like, day by day. Everyone, the education, also education system, I would say that, like, so many people, not just me, but there's a lot of people out there that doesn't get enter universities, to end universities, you know. The system UPUs itself, there's so many things happen. There's so many problems. And right now, people are suffering, dying. They are melted innocence, that's, you know, left out. And I would say that there's a lot of people out there that lose job. And I can't just sit here and do nothing, you know. This is our future. And like I mentioned just now, they will define our youth future, our future leaders. So if we don't do something tomorrow or today, you know, it might lead to something much more worse. You know, our cases might be like 100K per day. So we don't want that. And yeah, I do agree that, you know, when you think about, you know, the risk, what happens tomorrow. But the thing is, if we don't move or we don't do anything, our country will, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in our country. You can see what happened in the parliament sitting yesterday. So we don't want the same thing happen. So this is in the moment where all the rakyat should turun and protest tomorrow. Yeah.
Can I ask you whether you feel that young people specifically have been disproportionately affected by, negatively affected by the management of this pandemic and the impact of the economic lockdowns?
Obviously, the youth right now is like, I would say it's unprecedented for everyone, but the students specifically, you know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I would say, let me give some example. You know, the SPM students right now, they are suffering. They don't know when is their trials. You know, they have to go to school 1st of September. And with the current situation right now, is, you know, it's not safe for them to be in the school. That's not safe for them just to learn for the sake of the paper. That's not fair. So there's a lot of things that's going on in our country. Not just that, that the students itself is going to be our future leaders. And if we don't do anything, if we just sit at home and, you know, the country will, you know, definitely will drop our future, will drop our rights. I don't want that. And not just that, you know, not just about education system, that's about economics, you know. There's so many people out there that lost job. Even I can't, you know, there's a moment where I literally cannot think about what's going on right now, because like so many, most of my friends, of their parents that lose job. So,
I can imagine just it's over. It's overwhelming. Rifaya, thank you for speaking with us. That was youth activist Nurul Rifaya Muhammad Iqbal. After this, we'll discuss the investigations against journalists for just doing their jobs. Stay tuned to consider this.
Amanah di tangan kita. Adat, budaya dan semangat menjadi kesinambungan perpaduan tanah air yang tercinta. Berteraskan adab yang terpahat di jiwa dan raga. Marilah bersama kita membina negara Malaysia. Semua yang terjadi adalah berita, tetapi tiada siapa yang boleh bawakan yang terkini dan tergempar seperti kami.
Dilihat hanya memberi wang tanpa matlamat yang tepat. Dia tidak melakukan apa-apa kesalahan.
Untuk mendapatkan jawapan yang bermakna, kita perlu soalan yang tepat.
Amat sedih dengan apa yang berlaku di atas.
Tiada ruang untuk berita palsu.
Negara kita telah merekodkan kes harian baru sebanyak...
Hanya fakta yang diberikan.
Amat penting untuk meneruskan perjuangan negara melawan pandemik ini.
Sentiasa memastikan suara anda
Suara rakyat didengari.
Kenapa?
Membawakan apa yang penting di mana sahaja anda berada.
Kerana kita hendak putuskan rantaian jangkitan.
Belanjawan dan pendekatan bertemakan survival ini secara keseluruhan.
Teruskan bersama kami, Astro Awani, saluran berita yang paling dipercayai rakyat Malaysia.
Kita berhadapan dengan situasi pandemik yang agak.
Hi, thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. The recent spate of police investigations, which included journalists, have been criticised as a move to silence the media and to curtail the increasingly critical questions of public interest over issues such as the management of the COVID-19 pandemic. Gayathri Venkateswaran is an assistant professor at the School of Media, Languages and Cultures of the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. She joins us now. Gaya, good evening. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think the police have issued summonses for journalists over their articles about 5 times since the emergency took effect. I'm wondering, Gaya, what do you think has been the political purpose of these actions against the media? Is it about controlling the narrative, about suppressing inconvenient facts and perspectives?
Good evening, Melissa. Good evening, Sharad. Thank you so much for having me on the show. But before I answer the question, I just want to say that, you know, I'm totally inspired by the youth you've had on the show and also those who are organizing in the forefront. I think it's been amazing looking at people in Parliament and looking at the youngsters who are organizing this. I think I'm totally inspired by the energy and the dedication. And then coming to your question about the media, I think I want to reverse maybe also the question that you've had earlier on in terms of what are some of the crimes or, you know, what are the sort of political motivations. I think the question needs to be turned back to those who are possibly committing crimes from the state's point of view, right? I mean, at the state's end. I think that it's not crimes against the state that we are seeing, but it's actually state institutions and state bodies, state leadership, that might actually be, I'm taking this a little bit far to say committing some kinds of crime. Whether we look at it from the angle of possible negligence in some of their management, in the way that I would say there has been abuse of power and not being held accountable. So I think we need to turn it around and actually say that it's not for the media, it's not for the journalists to have to defend themselves and the stories that they're writing. But I think it's the state that has completely lacked the accountability and does not want to be accountable. So when we look at the stories that you've mentioned, five at least that we know of, whether it has been covering the doctors, the Hartal contract, for contract doctors on contract, or even some of the reports about the pandemic, or also coverage of, you know, just about anything, being present in a particular area. Now, these are access that journalists need. These are the work of journalists. This is what the media ought to be doing anyway as part of their work. So I think that positioning all of these as, or at least, you know, calling them in for questioning or witness statement or, you know, possibly charging them with trespassing or violating any of these laws, I think it's actually, it's an act of aggression by the state. And I think we do need to call it out for what it is, because otherwise we keep getting into this circular question, you know, what did they do wrong? And what is it that why do they have to keep defending themselves? Because the question of what crimes have they committed, the answer to that is none, completely none, right? These are all by the book coverage, by the book issues. And I think it's the state we need to hold accountable.
Gaya, you know, this has just put you back in that, and myself, I guess, in that zone in the mid-90s, kind of the dark days of the Barisan National government, and I mean, all the way into through the Reformasi years to the end of the Barisan National period under Najib Razak, when the media was often, targeted because of its, desire to expose wrongdoing or to create alternative narratives. I mean, are we just basically still at the starting block in this in terms of media freedoms?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we do see the patterns, right? I do see, for example, in the case of Heidi Kwa, I mean, this is an issue that the late Irene Fernandez brought up through Tanaga Anita in a publication or the documentation from more than 25 years ago. It's 25 years ago, I believe. And, you know, she was charged at that time under the Printing Presses and Publications Act. The issue stays. The as we say, the whistleblowers or the messengers are the ones that get targeted, right? So indeed, there is that pattern, as you mentioned, Sharad, that, you know, it's what we have seen before in you know, from the BN days as well. But I think the surrounding issues are not the same anymore. I think the level of media awareness, I think the level of public engagement, I mean, look at the issues that the youth activists are bringing up. I mean, it clearly shows that this is a society that has definitely changed, and one that is much more aware, politically conscientious, and want to see greater change, right? So I think in response to some of the harassment of the journalists, you see a lot more people saying, hey, you don't go after the media, you go after the issues and address the concerns that are being raised. So I think that while we see those patterns of trying to control, I think the surrounding issues are definitely different. There's a lot more awareness, and I think a lot more challenge. And I think that makes the state a lot more nervous, right? Knowing that they probably caught themselves in a corner.
Can I ask you, Gayami, I realize that this is a very big question to be asking you in the last 2 minutes that we have left, but I'm wondering what it would take for dissent and for critical opinions to become democratic norm in Malaysia. Is it about, you talked about nervous government, is it about having a confident government? Is it about having confident leaders, or is it about legislation, or all of the above?
I suppose the easy answer is all of the above. And, you know, because it does come through this sense of, you know, as you say, the confidence, right, of saying, look, you can have that level of dissent, you can have that level of challenge. And as politicians, your job is to actually address them, debate and through whatever means possible, rather than using a heavy-handed tactic. I mean, it feels as though there's this, you know, there's in some institutions, time has stood still, so they haven't actually moved on from, I don't know, 1969 or you know, the Operasi Lalang period. They haven't moved on from there. But I think at this point, I think if you want to just quickly address your question, I think we must actually throw it back to the institutions, the government. Legislators have to get rid. They have to mobilize and get rid of all this legislation. The bureaucrats need to stop also, you know, using and employing all of this laws, whether it's the enforcement or the top leadership. I mean, look at the issues that are being, you know, the media is being targeted for. It's also top bureaucrats who are sort of like giving in to those kinds of tactics. So I think that as an immediate thing, we need to, I mean, you've heard us say this many times, we have to change the legislation, we have to get rid of them. But it's also bureaucrats who need to push and say, this is not good for Malaysia in the future, you know, aside from, of course, the sort of cultural change and mindset change, of course.
Thank you so much. That was Gayatri Venkateswaran from University of Nottingham, Malaysia. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the weekend, actually.
Yes, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for watching. Good night.